Hi, and welcome to Nerdiest Prime, where we're reviewing every single episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. We're on Season 1, Episode 5, and I'm joined by the Nerdiest Prime crew, Alan, Namir, and Lola. And today we're reviewing Where No One Has Gone Before.
The Enterprise meets the third use of a TOS starship model in just 5 episodes as they are delivered the Starfleet propulsion expert Kaczynski and his mysterious alien assistant. They fiddle with the engines until things go horribly awry, and the Enterprise is flung across 3 galaxies at unimaginable speeds, and the whole time the chief engineer just stands around doing nothing and barely reacting during the crisis. Kaczynski is even more full of himself now that he thinks that he's made extraordinary advances in propulsion, but Wesley discovers the alien assistant known as the Traveler is responsible for what has happened, using his special powers to navigate space in other dimensions. A botched attempt to return home by a weakened Traveler strands the crew in a weird realm where thoughts become reality, and we're treated to the fact that the Enterprise crew have the blandest fantasies ever. Worf sees a Klingon pet Targ on the bridge that is clearly a wild boar dressed in some shag carpet and glued on horns. Picard has tea with his dead mom, and other crew members perform ballet or play classical instruments with an imagined quartet. Meanwhile, Dr. Crusher, who clearly knows nothing about the alien's physiology, determines that he is dying. But it is later learned that what he really needs to recover are some positive vibes from the crew. And for the first time in human history, thoughts and prayers actually accomplish something, as Picard somehow manages to convince over 1,000 men, women, and children via a quick intercom announcement to clear their minds of all negative thoughts and think of the Traveler and his well-being. And despite the fact that most of them have no clue who Picard's referring to, the crew collectively help the Traveler get them home. Before he phases out of our existence, the Traveler tells Picard to watch out for Wesley, as he believes Wesley is some kind of rare cosmic super genius. But we already figured that out a couple of episodes ago.
This is the first episode where I really love it. I love the high concept science fiction episodes, and we're treated to some good character work as well. I mean, they definitely start the ball rolling on Wesley's storyline, and have that will progress later in the series. And the visual effects, the whole concept of reality intersecting with thought is I always enjoy that kind of Star Trek, so I really enjoyed this one.
That was one of my favorite scenes, just them like traveling. I like the scene when someone talks about how like the reason time, space, and thought are all interconnected is because your reality is like perceived through your thoughts. I thought that was interesting. And I love it when sci-fi kind of gets all like philosophical. I don't know. And then I like the scenes where everyone's kind of like hallucinating, like you guys were talking about before. Just because I like the Star Trek episodes where it's like reality is kind of falling apart, just because they're fun.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many good scenes in this episode. There's like Picard almost falling out of the turbo lift scene, the Worf with his pet Targ, Picard talking to his mother. And specifically, there's a moment right after, when he's talking to his mom and Riker interrupts him. And then he looks back and his mom is gone. There's like this really subtle acting by Patrick Stewart where there's this moment of anguish on his face, and it's so well done. And I just really, and now that I'm watching it in HD, I really noticed that. And it's like, it just really got me. I'm like, oh my God, that must have been so hard for Jean-Luc to see his mom again after all these years. And then she's gone, you know? And so he has to like relive the loss all over again. And then just absorb it and process it and then move on. And now I'm in command. We got to like figure this out.
I really enjoyed this one too. It was the first episode that felt to me like it was actual Star Trek, right? Like high concept, really well delivered, really good character moments, some really good writing. and surprising. Like the first time I watched it, I couldn't predict where it was going to go, what was going to happen. So I remember when I was watching it, that it was kind of sort of predictable, right? And it was starting to get interesting, right? The traveler flashes them over to another galaxy. And I remember thinking, yeah, man, wouldn't it be cool if they ended up going somewhere sort of off the map, totally, you know, like the edge of the universe or another dimension. And then I was like, they're never going to do that. And then they did it. And I was like, oh, and then that I was hooked. I was like, no matter what they did, they could have like had the worst writing after that. I was hooked just because it was well written, and they were able to kind of surprise you in a way that the other episodes weren't able to do. And I think some of the best Star Trek episodes are ones that do that.
I agree with you guys. I mean, in my opinion, this is the first good Star Trek The Next Generation episode. And although it's not as good as what we see later in the season or even in the series, it's like a first good, like hard sci-fi episode with metaphysical themes instead of the usual, you know, space opera. Not that there's anything wrong with space opera.
I never realized that they were just exploring their own galaxy.
In 3 centuries of space travel, we've charted just 11% of our galaxy. And then we accomplished this.
I just, for whatever reason, that always slipped by me. I thought that they had access to the entire kind of like immediate universe. I didn't realize they were confined to their own galaxy.
They got their own corner of the galaxy too.
Yeah, exactly. They've only explored 11% of their own one galaxy.
But that's something, that's what, you know, in part makes this episode stand out, is that they mentioned that specifically in the episode. Like, it's that kind of information that would have been in the writer's Bible, or, you know, they would have known internally. But it, until this episode, it had never been discussed, you know, directly.
Data, what distance have we traveled?
2,700,000 light years, sir.
I can't accept that.
I remember saying to my roommate, oh, this is kind of like Voyager. Because
yeah,
kind of a similar issue. So I thought that was kind of cool, too.
Captain, if these sensors are working, we're over 70,000 light years from where we were. We're on the other side of the galaxy.
Well, because remember when you said they have like boring fantasies, but I was under the impression that it was memories because it was Worf's childhood pet. And then you see Tasha Yar's, like she has a flashback from her childhood, and then you see Picard's mom. So I thought it was like not fantasies rather, but more like memories from the past, like coming back into the present.
I suppose it could be. I guess it didn't really specify if it was that kind of scenario happening. Because I'm like, there's also the guy who's like fighting the fire, and then there's the other two that are like running down the corridor, you know, getting chased by something. So I think some of it might have been hallucinations.
Maybe.
Yeah, and then Picard almost falls out into space, and
yeah,
you know, it seems like
falling on the turbolift.
Yeah, it seems like it was kind of a mix of things, like just whatever was popping into your mind at the time, I guess. So I know if I was on that ship, right, and I wasn't doing anything, I don't know what would come. Probably me doing my taxes or like sending an email. It'd be like an image of me, you know, going on a call, sorting out a bill or something. I don't know.
Well, I think really there's not a real good logical way of looking at it in universe, and I have other issues with that. But from looking at it from real universe point of view, it's obvious that a lot of those fantasies or hallucinations were there to give the characters a backstory, to give Picard a mom, to reveal again a little bit of Tasha Yar's backstory of evading rape gangs, and, you know, a Worf and him having, you know, a life before a childhood, you know, this kind of stuff. It didn't really add a whole lot to the characters, but it did, you know, humanize them in a way.
It might work better this way. Yes.
And nature itself.
Yeah, I actually think that this would have made a better pilot episode than Encounter at Farpoint. If they added like another half hour to it, because it does all the things that a pilot episode should do, right? Like it, or it had the potential to, right? It shows you all the characters. There's, you know, one of the things about the episode that I actually liked was I actually liked Wesley in it. Like I liked his through line and his arc in the episode and his relationship to the Traveler. It kind of made sense. You really start to understand why Picard wants to take Wesley under his wing. You know, it's not just because he feels guilty because he murdered Wesley's dad, but because, you know, the Traveler has basically said you need to take care of Wesley. So I think this could have been a really, really good pilot episode if they formatted it a little bit that way. And it's also like a really good way to show that there's so much in the universe that they don't know, right? There's so much in the universe that they haven't really explored, right? So that kind of gives a push to the rest of the series. Like it's to say, hey, there's a lot out there. And we're going to show you a glimpse, and maybe you can get there in seven seasons or maybe not, right? But it's all out there for you to kind of explore. So, you know, to me, this actually feels like it's the real start of the show.
It's really about Star Trek at its core. You know, the pilot episode of the original series was a very similar episode, and it was called Where No Man Has Gone Before, and they go to the edge of the galaxy. And so this one, again, like takes inspiration from the original series, but kind of adds something of its own. And yeah, it's a very, very Star Trek episode in that it's about exploring and going into the unknown. And I always love when Star Trek is doing that kind of stuff. So what does everybody think about Kaminsky?
I love Kaminsky.
Sorry, it's Kaczynski. What does everybody think of Kaczynski? And it's not Kaczynski. The Kaminsky method.
Kaczynski? No, I don't like Kaczynski. I like Kaminsky. No, Kaczynski was great. He was one of the major reasons why the episode worked. Because, you know, like he fits the role. You kind of you don't like him when you first meet him, but he's able to play him in a way where at the end of it, you're kind of like, okay, I understand him. You know, like he's a guy that thought he was smart, realized that he wasn't when he met somebody that was much smarter than he was and was having trouble dealing with it, right? And we've all kind of been in that situation or at least I'm in that situation all the time where you're like, you meet somebody that can do something better than you and you're like, oh, you, I really dislike you. And then you realize that they're you know, you're just not talented and they are. I feel like I'm revealing a lot about my interpersonal life right now.
One thing that Kaczynski isn't hiding is bad disposition.
Agreed. Also, he's arrogant, overbearing, self-important, and very sure of himself and his ability.
Well, at the beginning, we're like, oh, he sucks, he's so annoying and arrogant.
I thought everyone in the 24th century was supposed to be cool and enlightened, but Kaczynski is such an asshole, he almost throws the whole episode off because he's so irritating.
But the thing, you meet people like that in real life, so despite the fact this is like intense science fiction, it's still kind of true to life because you will meet people that are like that.
But people in Star Trek are not supposed to be like that anymore. That's what's interesting about that.
Says who?
But there are characters that are annoying or like are not good who are in Starfleet. Like humanity is better in Star Trek supposedly, that that's the idea. But it doesn't mean there aren't going to be like some like annoying personalities.
Yeah, like, just because they're enlightened doesn't mean they're not annoying.
Exactly. Bad personalities are human. That's part of humanity. And that has to be accepted along with every other part of humanity.
That's the corner they backed themselves into, was that Gene Roddenberry said that everyone would get along in the 24th century. And therefore you have this crew of characters who right now are kind of undefined, they're a little bland. I mean, outside of like Data and Geordi, like they're all kind of eh. And you bring in someone like Kaczynski, who's a blowhard, and he just rubs everybody the wrong way, and he introduces the conflict that's so sorely missing from the interpersonal dynamics of the crew.
Exactly. So,
and they have to keep doing that throughout the series, like bringing characters who create the conflict. And say Kaczynski certainly worked well to rile everybody up, because
kudos to that actor for making me hate so much, because I just hated Kaczynski, but he worked really well in the episode, and he played him just right, where, like you guys say at the end, you know, he kind of has his humble pie and he's able to like go with it.
Yeah, he gets a little bit of redemption at the end of his arc there.
Is Mr. Kaczynski like he sounds? A joke?
No, that's too cruel. He has then some small part of this.
My impression was that he's not actually from Tau Alpha C, right? Isn't the Traveler like just taking the form of an alien from Tau Alpha C? Isn't the Traveler some other thing?
Well, it's unclear. That's what it sounds like in this episode, but in he appears in the fourth season in Remember Me, and in that episode, Dr. Crusher goes to look for him, and she sets a course for Tau Alpha C.
Lay in a new course for Tau Alpha C, and send a subspace message advising them of our arrival.
Acknowledged.
Engage.
What? That doesn't make any sense. He's supposed to be from a different reality. Why would he be from a planet in their reality?
I was wondering why he kind of hitched his wagon to Kaczynski, because he's such an,
Oh, yes, we might as well let him try it. You are too generous. Boy! Don't play with that.
He's kind of a blowhard and not that effective at his job. But then they say that he's, he hitches, basically rides on starships to travel around, because I guess maybe he doesn't have capability himself to get his own ship to travel through our dimension. But yeah, I think it's totally possible that he's from Tau Alpha C and from our reality, but he just has the ability to explore other planes of existence as well. So
but he's exploring the plane of existence that he then is from.
It's a little unclear. There are some things about the Traveler and in the writing around him and his motivations and what happens to him throughout the episode, that's a little muddled for me. And the episode still works, I like him as a character, but there's something a little muddled about him and his whole backstory. Like, how does the Enterprise, like, how do these weird jump things happen at all? Like, what motivates these jumps? Because the Traveler has obviously been on other ships, and those things, he doesn't have those things happen on these other ships where they go on to the other side of the universe. But when he gets on the Enterprise, something happens.
It's because of Wesley. He's doing his thing, and then he looks over at Wesley fondly, and then he misses something that he should have caught on his screen. And that sends the whole whatever warp equation out of whack.
And I think the second one, when they go to that other realm of where thought intersects reality, was because he was just weak and he'd injured himself through doing this crazy jump to across three galaxies. I think there's like a couple things at play. Yeah,
but it doesn't make sense to me that because he's weakened, that somehow that brings him to the realm of thought intersecting time, because that to me would be the opposite. Oh, I have extra energy to send him to the extra special place. But
I just think he wasn't able to control it. I think he wasn't able to control it. Like, he's supposed to be a lens. Because he was weak. Yeah, he's a lens for thought, right? He's a lens for magic thought energy. So he wasn't able to control that lens enough to get people to get them to where they needed to go.
I would have to guess exhaustion, fatigue.
Is he gonna be all right?
What is the boy doing here?
Mom, he's my friend.
I thought his introduction was a bit cheesy and heavy-handed, but I do really like the Traveler, and it starts this whole arc for Wesley. For Wesley, a Crusher, you know, about his destiny to become a higher being.
So there's that scene, everybody leaves and the Traveler's like, hey, I need to talk with you, Captain. It's about Wesley. And the Captain's like, the boy, you know, like, first of all, who else would he be talking about? Obviously it's Wesley. But he tells him about how Wesley is talented. He's like the Mozart of spaceships. But it's imperative that nothing change, right? Like, I'm telling you this because I want you to keep like kind of like a low key guiding hand, support him, encourage him. But it's really important that things naturally happen the way that they're supposed to happen. And you're like, well, that makes sense because you don't want to change whatever Wesley's natural progression into space god is going to be. But then at the end, he makes him an acting ensign. Right. He's just like, which would never have happened normally. Right. But he totally flew in the face of the advice that the Traveler gave him.
For outstanding performance in the best Starfleet tradition, Wesley Crusher is made acting ensign with the duties and privileges of that rank.
And I understand why, because he wants him, you know, I think it's because the show wants Wesley more involved and to be on the bridge. And they're like, we can't keep having this conversation every single time Wesley wants to be on the bridge about how he's not supposed to be there. So let's just make him an acting ensign. But it should throw his entire trajectory off.
I guess I don't feel the same way you do, Namir. To me, it feels like it makes sense that making him making Wesley Crusher an acting ensign is a way to encourage him without interference in the way of like telling him straight out, basically. But it encourages him to go down that path.
I don't think that happens. Like, to me, that's like a one in a million thing, right? Like, Wesley has to know that happening to him is super special. It's one thing to encourage him, but it's another thing to make him like an actual Starfleet, you know, personnel.
I say I appreciated the development of Wesley's arc. Sadly, you know, in the episodes coming up, they go back to, you know, giving him pretty poor characterization. You know, it really, not till like the end of the first season, you know, that we get some good Wesley moments again, really. But yeah, I mean, It was a nice moment. It was like a family moment, you know. And they're welcoming him into the family as the crew. So,
you know, frankly, in a lot of ways, I actually don't think this episode on paper should have worked, right? Like, it's kind of goofy, right? Like, they go to the edge of the universe and they use their thoughts become real and they use good feelings and mind magic to get back to their current galaxy, right? Like that shouldn't work, but it does. So however they made it work, they made it work. So I don't know what to tell you. It seems like they were in some dangerous waters, but they were able to kind of navigate it really well because they know what they're doing. And this was actually the first episode where they're like, oh yeah, I feel like we're in safe hands, right? Like, you know, I'm willing to watch other episodes because if they're as good as this one, then that's worth the risk.
Has anyone here seen the movie Elf with Will Ferrell?
Yeah.
Yes.
This episode, the ending of this episode reminded me of Elf because at the end of Elf, Santa's sleigh won't go because no one believes in Santa. So they all have to sing carols or like believe in Santa because the sleigh runs on believers, basically. Like the more people believe in Santa, the faster the sleigh can go. And so the part where Ricard's like, everyone believe in and think of the Traveler so that the ship can go, I was like, this is Elf. I just like thought it was a funny parallel.
And I felt like, you know, again, my favorite scenes were the ones where the reality starts converging with thought. And I always thought, I mean, I know it's a 45-minute show and they have a budget and everything, but it just seems like there should have been more chaos during that period, because you got 1,000 people on board, several children. Like, what would their brains come up with? Maybe all sorts of crazy storybook creatures and stuff running around the corridors. There should be just mayhem everywhere with 1,000 people's thoughts manifesting themselves. So I was like, it's like it wasn't as crazy as it could have been, but I guess you know they were probably limited by TV, but so they did the best they could. But.
Think! Put the flame out in your thoughts!
I love this one. I've rewatched it a lot myself as well. I always enjoy special effects, the character moments, the concepts. So I would give this one my first 4 out of 5 starships.
I am going to give, where no one has gone before, 3.5 starships. I'm going to give this episode 3.5 starships out of 5. I don't have closing comments necessarily, because I feel like I've said everything already, but I didn't give it like a 4 or higher because I kind of want to save my 4s and 5s for future episodes. And so I don't want to hypothetically devalue those future 4s in case those 4s are better. Anyway, that's it.
You know what? No, I'm going for it. I'm giving it 4.5. 4.5 starships. 4 starships and a shuttle.
I don't know how to do it out of 5. I would give it a 7 out of 10. And, you know, it's like on the high range, which is kind of like what I gave Encounter at Farpoint. But this is definitely a better episode than Encounter at Farpoint, but it's in the same kind of neighborhood in terms of my overall enjoyment and, you know, my go-to repetition, like, of going to see that episode. I'll watch it every few years. It's definitely worthy. It's definitely an episode that if anybody was interested in watching Star Trek, I would say watch this episode.
Agreed.
Yep, agreed.